will recognize the name of Rockefeller, right? John D. Rockefeller. He was the richest man of his time, the first, I believe, American billionaire. Well, someone asked him, how much more money do you need? And he said, just a little bit more. Well, when he died, there were speculations about how much wealth he had amassed. And so someone, a reporter, went to his personal secretary at the funeral and bluntly asked him, so, how much did he leave? And the answer came, he left it all. He didn't take anything with him. Well, we laugh at this, but you know what? More than once in history, people have tried to take their power, their possessions with them after death. Let me give you a couple of examples. The Great Pyramid of Giza. It took tens of thousands of slaves to work for many, many years to move 5.9 million tons of stone to build it. What is it? It's a cenotaph. It's a tomb. He just wanted, the pharaoh wanted to convey that his power was ongoing even after his death. And the emperor of China, the first Qin emperor, the one that built the Great Wall, he also had his tomb built, his mausoleum. It's so big. Imagine that he had 8,000 terracotta, life-size soldiers built to be buried with him so as to impress that his power, his armies were with him even after death. In Rome, Castel Sant'Angelo, close to the Vatican. It was originally called the Mausoleum of Adrian, the emperor. He had a castle built for his tomb, as so to impress how strong he still was, how worthy of respect and fear. The Taj Mahal. Taj Mahal also is a mausoleum that was built by the Mughal emperor for his wife who died in childbirth. So all of this as a attempt really to bring in the afterlife the power, the privileges that they had in this life. You know the famous line that Pope Francis quotes, I think it was first pronounced by Billy Graham. He says, you never see a hearse pulling a U-Haul, do you? Right? You don't take with you what you have. And you know what? Strange, extravagant burials are still common. Maybe we don't build pyramids, but Gene Roddenberry, the creator of the Star Trek series, he died in the early 90s, if I'm not mistaken, but he had a very specific wish, which was realized in 1997. Space burial. His remains were launched on a rocket in outer space. Strange. But today's readings give us an answer to all of this. They tell us very bluntly, nothing in this world lasts forever. We hear it throughout the readings, the Ecclesiastes. We hear it in the letter of St. Paul to the Colossians and in the Gospel. Nothing ultimately lasts. Nothing is worth beyond the limited time we have here on earth. The responsorial psalm says, if you learn how to count your days, you will be wise. In other words, if you know that your days are numbered, you will live wisely. Those who do not, Jesus calls them fools. You are a fool if you think that you can take your money, fame, honor, pleasures, all the usual suspects with you. If you put your hope in them, they will let you down. Rudyard Kipling, the author of The Jungle Book, turned into movies. Just this year there's a new movie out. He was once invited to give a talk to the students at McGill University in Montreal. And as he addressed them, he told them of not putting too much importance into money, possessions, positions, glory, titles, and so forth. And he said at the end, and I quote, "Someday you will meet a man who cares for none of these things. Then you will know how poor you are." True wealth, true riches are not the ones that you leave behind when you die. That's why we read in today's first reading from the book of Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanity, everything is vanity. The word vanity translates really a Hebrew word that means air. Bishop Robert Barrett says it's a bubble. It's just a bubble. It could puff any moment. Everything is vanity. Who is Ecclesiastes? The book begins by saying, "Words of the son of King David." That's Solomon. So according to Solomon, everything is vanity. Let's face it, Solomon was the man who had it all. He was the wisest man. He was very wealthy, very powerful, very successful in under any aspect. And yet, he now muses on all of it and says, it's vanity, it's emptiness, it's useless, worthless. Solomon had it all. So much so that according to the 11th chapter of the first book of Kings, Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. He really had it all, right? And yet, he says, it's emptiness, it's useless. Why? He says, you will not take it with you. So you struggle for what ultimately will become dust. It will become nothing. Paul, to the Colossians, today's second reading, makes the same point. He says, seek what is above, not what is of the earth. Put your heart in what is above, not on what is unreliable. And he says, so put to death the parts of you that are earthly, such as immorality, impurity, and the greed that is idolatry. This is a key word. Because there's nothing wrong in pursuing the good things of this life. Nothing wrong with that. What is wrong is when we make of them our idols. In other words, when we worship them. You know, Ernest Hemingway had a strange, unusual custom. Every year, on New Year's Day, he would give away his most treasured possessions. Every New Year's Day, he would give away his treasured possessions. Someone asked him about this. He said, "Why do you do it?" He answered, "If I can give them away, then I own them. If I can't, they own me." Therefore, the message is really, learn to be free. Use the things of this earth, but do not become a slave of them. Don Robinson said, "One of the weaknesses of our age is our apparent inability to distinguish our needs from our greeds." Finally, let's turn to the gospel. Jesus also makes the same point. He tells us the parable of a rich man, so successful that he has no space to store his possessions. So he makes plans for bigger banks. He wants more, more and more. But God calls him a fool. He thought, now that I have it all, I can relax, eat, drink, have fun, take it easy, enjoy life. Fool, today your life will be asked of you. And so, the message for us, do not store up for yourselves riches on this earth, and instead become rich in what is important in the eyes of God. And what is that richness that we need to store up in the eyes of God? Everything that we do for others. If we spend ourselves, our energy, our life indeed, for love of others, that's what makes us truly rich in the eyes of God. Rick Warren, the author of A Purpose-Driven Life, says it beautifully when he says, it's not a sin to be rich, it's a sin to die rich. Meaning you have held on to your properties, your things, instead of using them for others. And let me now close with a little anecdote, a little story called The Carpenter's House. I think it makes the point of today's readings. It says that an elderly carpenter was ready to retire. So he told his employer, his contractor, of his plans to quit. He said, I will miss the paycheck, but I've had it of working for others, building houses, beautiful houses for others, while my family still lives in a small apartment. The contractor was sorry to see his best employee work. So he tried to persuade him, but he couldn't. At the end he said, let me ask you for one last favor. As a farewell keepsake, please help me build one last house. It will be the very last personal favor that you do to me. The carpenter finally said yes, but his heart was not in it. He resorted to shoddy workmanship and used inferior material. He cut corners to complete this last house the easiest, fastest, cheapest possible way. When finally it was done, the builder came and gave him the keys of the house and said, this is our gift to you for many years of good, faithful service. What a shock. If he only had known this house was for him. He spent all his life working on someone else's homes, and now that he had a chance to build his own, he cut corners. This is what happens to us if we spend all our life building up things that ultimately will not make us rich in the eyes of God. Amen.